Hey friends, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today we're going to continue on with this series about Caesar's Messiah, refuting it. And today we're going to start looking at some of these parallels between Josephus and the Gospels. All right, this is the hardcore proof of Joseph Atwill's theory. Okay, this is what it all rests on. Again, we have this theory that the Flavian family, along with Josephus and some others, got together and wrote the Gospels. All right, making Jesus up from thin air, fashioning him after both prophecies in the Old Testament and also Titus, okay, trying to make Jesus look like Titus. Now, guys, this is a conspiracy theory of conspiracy theories. I mean, this is slapping on that good old-fashioned tinfoil hat to block out alien communications, if I ever saw one. Right, this entire theory goes against so many things. We're looking at this story popping up 40 years after the supposed events. All right, we're talking about a faith that just pops up and grows like wildfire, with its foundations built on just lies made up by the Flavian family. And nobody, none of the Jews, ever stopped and said, you know what? I don't remember any Jesus guy. Boy, I was in Jerusalem that year that happened. There was nothing like that. Nobody, no writings, nobody ever stood up and said that. No, this movement grew like wildfire. And keep in mind, too, the Romans had already completely crushed the Jews into submission. All right? The Jews were already conquered. They were put into submission. There wasn't a problem there. Of course, along with this conspiracy theory, is the idea that Jesus never even existed, even though we have other historians that mention him. And friends, all of that, and of course, all the other things I mentioned in the previous podcast that are really problems with this conspiracy theory, all of that resting on thin air. Again, what does Joseph Atwill have to substantiate this whole conspiracy theory? I mean, this is huge. This is a grand operation where nobody leaked the information. Nobody stopped and said, hey, you guys are pulling one over on us. Okay, and now we have one of the biggest faiths in the world built on this foundation of disciples who were willing to give their lives and die in horrible, gruesome, painful ways rather than recant their faith that apparently was just made up and it was a big joke and they read it in a book instead of witnessing it in person, I guess. And you know, this many years later, 2,000 years later, this faith spans the globe, and it was based on a fabricated story. What proof? What evidence? And at this point, friends, we need some pretty substantial evidence to back up such a bizarre conspiracy theory here. Well, what does he have? We have a collection of parallels between Josephus and the Bible. That's what we have. And so starting today and over the next couple of days, we're going to look at some of these parallels and, we'll see just how convincing they really are. First one I want to start off with is this account of, well, if you look her up on the internet, she's always referred to as Cannibal Mary. And I want to read to you the actual account, and then I'll tell you what Joseph Atwill actually says about it. All right, and so this is kind of depressing, but it's an interesting read nonetheless. Now, this is an account of the destruction of Jerusalem. So at this point, everybody is really hungry. The city is surrounded. They've been starving for quite some time. And here is what one eyewitness says that is recorded by Josephus. And so it starts, throughout this city, people were dying of hunger in large numbers and enduring unspeakable sufferings. In every house, the merest hint of food sparked violence, and close relatives fell to blows, snatching from one another the pitiful supports of life. No respect was paid even to the dying. The ruffians, these would be the anti-Roman zealots, searched them in case they were concealing food somewhere in their clothes or just pretending to be near death. Gaping with hunger, like mad dogs, lawless gangs went staggering and reeling through the streets, battering upon the doors like drunkards, and so bewildered that they broke into the same house two or three times in 1 hour. Need drove the starving to gnaw at anything. A refuse, which even animals would reject, was collected and turned into food. In the end, they were eating belts and shoes and leather stripped off their shields. Tufts of withered grass were devoured and sold in little bundles for 4 drachmas. But why dwell on the commonplace rubbish which the starving were driven to feed upon, given that what I have to recount is an act unparalleled in the history of either the Greeks or the barbarians, and as horrible to relate as it is incredible to hear? For my part, I should gladly have omitted this tragedy, lest I should be suspected of monstrous fabrication, but there were many witnesses of it among my contemporaries, and besides, I should do poor service to my country if it were to surpass the agonies she went through. Among the residents of the region beyond Jordan was a woman called Mary, daughter of Eleazar, of the village of Bethazuba, the name which means house of hyssop. She was well off and of good family, and had fled to Jerusalem with her relatives, where she became involved with the siege. Most of the property she had packed up and brought with her from Perea had been plundered by the tyrants, and the rest of her treasure, together with such foods as she had been able to procure, was being carried by their henchmen in their daily raids. In her bitter resentment, the poor woman cursed and abused these extortioners, and this incensed them against her. However, no one put her to death, either from exasperation or pity. She grew weary of trying to find food for her kinsfolk. In any case, it was by now impossible to get any. Wherever you tried, famine gnawed at her vitals, and the fire of rage was ever fiercer than famine. So driven by fury and want, she committed a crime against nature. Seizing her child, an infant at the breast, she cried, "My poor baby, why should I keep you alive in this world of war and famine? Even if we live till the Romans come, they will make slaves of us, and anyway, hunger will get us before slavery does, and the rebels are crueler than both. Come, be food for me, and an avenging fury to the rebels, and a tale of cold horror to the world to complete the monstrous agony of the Jews." With these words, she killed her son, roasted the body, swallowed half of it, and stored the rest in a safe place. But the rebels were on her at once, smelling roasted meat and threatening to kill her instantly if she did not produce it. She assured them that she had saved them a share and revealed the remains of her child. Seized with horror and stupefaction, they stood paralyzed at the sight. But she said, "This is my own child and my own handiwork. Eat, for I have eaten already. Do not show yourselves weaker than a woman or more pitiful than a mother." She is a feisty one. But if you have pious scruples and shrink away from human sacrifice, then what I have eaten can count as your share, and I will eat what is left as well. At that they slunk away, trembling, not daring to eat, although they were reluctant to yield even this food to the mother. The whole city soon rang with the abomination. When people heard of it, they shuddered as though they had done it themselves. Wow. Wow. That is such a depressing story. Now, going back to Joseph Atwill and Caesar's Messiah, he wants to bring in some parallels here. Here we have a story of a woman who eats her own child. Her name is Mary. Okay, so there's parallel number one. Okay, so we're already looking at Mary, mother of Jesus here. Okay, she is the daughter of Eleazar, and the Gospels have Mary being the sister of Eleazar. You guys convinced yet? Okay, moving on. So Joseph Atwill then takes it further and points out that Mary, ate her child, roasted and ate her child. Therefore, her child was a roasted sacrifice. Now, nowhere in this writing is this child referred to as a roasted sacrifice, and nowhere in the Gospels is Jesus mentioned or referred to as a roasted sacrifice. But bear with me here. In this particular passage of Josephus, the child is referred to as a sacrifice, and it's roasted, and she just happens to be from this town called Bethzob. Okay, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. But that town means, or that name means, House of Hyssop. Alright, so here we have this concept of Jesus being a Passover lamb. The Passover lamb was a roasted sacrifice. Okay, that was what the Passover was. It was a roasted lamb. And in the preparation of the Passover, there is some hyssop used. All right, so you have this concept of hyssop because Mary was from the house of hyssop and she roasted her son and called her son a sacrifice. And therefore, here we have the roasted sacrifice of the house of hyssop. And that's exactly how Joseph Atwill describes this incident or what happened here, the roasted sacrifice of the house of hyssop. All right, guys, that's one of the parallels. I mean, that's it. All right, so you have a woman named Mary. She is the daughter of Lazarus rather than the brother, and she eats her own child. And in this process of, well, in this dialogue between her and the rebels, she mentions that the child was a sacrifice, as in, well, the child died to keep her alive. The child didn't willingly give himself to keep her alive. She killed the child and ate it. She roasted it with fire because she didn't have a microwave or an oven. And, well, she's from a town or a village that is, well, means House of Hyssop. And hyssop is used in the Passover preparation. Ugh, that's it, guys. That is it. There's one of those parallels, and the rest are just like it. Guys, you know, I just want to point this out. The Bible, okay, the New Testament is, it's a large chunk of writing. There's a lot there, all right? Especially the Gospels, all right? There's a lot that goes down in the Gospels. In Josephus's writings, there is a ton of material. I mean, there really is. There's a lot of material. What are the chances of you finding some odd parallels? For example, people named Mary. I think I read somewhere that it was either one out of every three or one out of every four women in Jerusalem during that time, or rather Israel, was named Mary. What are the chances of a couple elements here or there, somehow, by tweaking those elements, perhaps changing the terminology, changing the names, playing around with the names of villages and stuff like that, what are the chances of you being able to concoct some kind of a parallel between Josephus, rather large body of writings, and the Gospels? I'd say they're pretty good. Now, again, we're trying to, we've got Joseph Atwill with his conspiracy theory wanting us to believe that all this went down, that the Flavians wrote the Gospels and all the other Christian writings, and it was all just a big hoax. He has absolutely nothing to substantiate these claims. He has nothing. But again, you know, and I mentioned this before, when his parallels, his code, if you will, when it works, well, that's proof, all right? When it really does sound like the parallels are pretty good, well, that's proof that the Flavians wrote it. When they kind of work, well, that's just proof that they were writing in code. When they don't work at all, when they completely fall on their face, well, that's also proof that they were writing in code, and the joke's all on us, right? It's unfalsifiable. So we just, all we have to go on here is these parallels. This whole conspiracy theory rests on nothing but contrived parallels, where somebody sits down, reads Josephus, reads into it as much as they can, tries to create these strange, odd similarities between Josephus and the Gospels, and then presents them in a way where terminology of Josephus is modified and changed in Christianese, or words from the Gospel, terms from the Gospel are inserted in, and names are changed, names are shuffled, things like that. As we go and look through these parallels, you're going to see just how ridiculously flimsy this stuff is. But, you know, hey guys, I guess you need to know about it, because there's a lot of people out there that are now getting all hot and happy about this new theory that's going around. It is a conspiracy theory. I know I'm saying that on purpose, because it's a conspiracy theory, and it's a pretty big one. So anyway, I'm going to stop right there. Friends, if you like these podcasts, if you like what I'm doing with Youth Apologetics Training, if you want to help this ministry out, you can send donations to P.O. Box 2392, Loveland, Colorado. That's Loveland, Colorado. It's all one word, other than Colorado. 80539. And with that, I love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.